Good evening. It's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock here on the West Coast of the United States. And welcome to HBM Revisited. And tonight we're going to venture our way into Chapter 8. But we're a bit of the way down the road now. And I wanted to, there was a very interesting post that came through on the website. The website is wingsofchaos.com, and I need to do a lot more work on it. I have to post even Chapter 8, which I haven't done yet, and I'm beginning to get the sound files, which I'll be uploading soon as well. But I'd like to actually start off by reading the post that was on Chapter 7 that we covered last night, and it was a really quite an interesting post. So that chapter, the title of that chapter is Sheep and Sleep. And the, pardon? And that particular post was posted by Harry Lundell. But it's worth reading, and it'll help put us in, let's say, right in the middle of where we need to be for now, Chapter 8. So, let's begin. Chapter 7 sets out to give us an opportunity to prove to ourselves once and for all and beyond any doubt that our organic machines are on automatic pilot, slowly drifting down the river of life with no one in the captain's seat. The author states on page 49 of the 2007 edition that when the machine is asleep, we cannot be convinced that it is asleep. But when others call our attention to the fact, we become more alert, more on guard, and in spite of ourselves, the machine begins to awaken. This relates to the importance of discernment, as discussed in the previous chapter, 6, and points to the idea that contrast is the basis of discernment. And jumping ahead a little bit in his post, he had a very unique experience. And he states it here. When I was a younger man, I had a large red handlebar mustache. I was quite proud of the eye-catching properties of the mustache, particularly as regards the attentions of the opposite sex, and fell into the habit of pulling on it in various ways, like some people use a worry stone. One eventful day, a friend I had not seen in 3 years came back into town to see me. He was noticeably different in his manner of presentation and presence, and somehow more solid. When I asked him where he had been, he responded that he had been with a Gurdjieff group in New Mexico, and that there was there was an answer to my dissatisfaction with academic life if I were willing to make a new effort, which he doubted I would be able to pull off. Of course, this set the let's pull the mustache machine into high gear, which prompted him to shout, "Stop that! That is a mechanical action that I, and probably everybody else that knows you, find annoying." He leaned into my face and with a smile said, "If you're going to pull on your mustache, do it with gusto," while making a dramatic twist on the rather healthy handlebar of his own. This experience was thereupon imprinted forever within my psyche, down to the smallest detail. And it goes on. I mean, his experience goes on. But let's remember that and what occurred there. And we'll use that in our work tonight on Chapter 8, which is called Inner Aims. So recall that experience as we venture our way into Chapter 8 tonight. Thanks for posting that, Harry. So, Chapter 8, and Simon, are you on?
Yeah, I am here.
Good, thank you. Do you want to get us started on Chapter 8 then?
Here we go.
Okay.
Chapter 8, Inner Aims. By making our formulation of our inner aims towards transformation more exact, we may eventually develop a real work aim, not something mental and subjective, but an aim which is practical, immediate, accomplishable, and which could actually serve a greater, more objective aim.
Well, that's a pretty formidable challenge as this chapter opens, and you've got to wonder to yourself whether I'm going to be asking the question about the term formulation of our inner aims towards transformation in a more exact manner. And I might even ask it of all of us that is on tonight. So start thinking about it, considering it. What would the nature of a more exact aim be? So let's jump into it. I'm going to breeze through some of the first paragraphs, because we've been there, we've talked about this. Even if we're successful in life in the ordinary sense, we probably very quickly realize that the things we could accomplish in ordinary life simply would not satisfy us in any serious way. We understand that life, after a while, some of us, for some reason, as defined in the earlier chapters, called fish that want to know more, that had and wanted to know more about things. You know, that's the tribe that we wind up being in. That's why we're here. We came to this. What an unusual thing to do on a Wednesday night, in the middle of the night for some of us, 1 hour to sit here and listen to some discussion of a book called The Human Biological Machine as a Transformational Apparatus by E.J. Gold. But nevertheless, here we are, because there's something that just doesn't quite cut it for us. And as we jump ahead, there is one common idea among those who come to a school: the real possibility of a life that could be different from the kind of life lived by the majority of human beings, a greater, more exalted life. So there's some kind of a tangible sense of that. And here comes the difficulty and the responsibility of owning who we are. Those of us that are here this evening have enough of that sense that we are here to be part of this discussion. We've taken the time to spend time in a school with others, to work together, to find something different. Part of what we're going to be asking about this evening is, what is that something different specifically in you? What is it? And can you put your hands on it? And note that that, in fact, isn't something that we own that. In our noble enthusiasm in the earlier stages of our search, we may have originally set out to serve the evolution of humanity, save the planet, etc. We would fight to the end to do whatever is required. And we go out there in the world and we... And now that we have seen something a little more, certainly everybody else wants to too. But we find to our horror that not only are people not interested in that, they're going to fight us about it. In many cases, you bring up information like this and they're repelled, shocked by it. Part of the work I do, I'm a CPA, as I've mentioned, and I have unusual clients in that, like right now, I'm trying to help executive group form as a group, to work together as a group, to group work rather than individual performances. And I find that I can only go so far in approaching how they work together. When I start to bring up the inner atmosphere, there's immediately they begin to freeze. There's a tangible fear in that. We should know by now that that tangible fear comes from the habits, historical personality. That's what part of our challenge is, to work with that historical personality. So, we have discovered most people in life are satisfied with the aims of life. And you start with people that you think are doing good work out there. And in essence, what it is that they're really just the satisfaction of the life work that they're on. So whatever it is, a high raise, a promotion, so on and so forth. But as we continue, and I'm now at the bottom of page 56, if we really want to contribute something toward the general evolution of the human race and the planet, then we should remember that we cannot really help anyone else until we have helped ourselves. Please comment on that for me. Just hang on to that for a moment. How does that feel to you? What does that mean? What is your first level of work? Thoughts? Comments?
Harry says here, it is perhaps like reverse engineering. First establish what the school needs, then ask what we can do to help accomplish it. Then what do we need to give our effort? What tool feeds our hand?
Okay.
Agni Vidalia, it seems like you are always working on yourself.
Okay. But we start on the path and we think of, how can I help the world? And there's this sense of being, helping others and help the world, help. Well, we're not prepared for that. We're not prepared to do that yet. So we have to change the focus from a certain form of altruism to a certain form of self-interest. So it's a different, our responsibility is you gotta work on yourself in a certain way. And working on yourself in that certain way creates something, then you have some gain. That's the challenge. Coming to a community means coming to work together as a group. It does not mean coming to work with a teacher. The teacher is a guest of the community and remains a guide for a certain amount of time only. So coming to this environment that we're in tonight allows us to begin the sense of working together as a group. Now, what happened with Harry and this friend, true friend of his that he met, coming from this other group in New Mexico? What was courageous and unusual about that event? And what did the person do? Put themselves online to do something quite different.
Well, he had the help of a foreign eye, an objective witness of what he was doing, and he was courageous enough to tell him that.
Yes.
He had the great help of that objective viewer. And that's what an environment like a school will give you.
So I challenge each of us, I challenge you in a sense, is that something that you can do? Can we do that one to another? Can we be a friend on that level? The typical reaction in life to a comment like that would have been anger, or some sort of negative response. How dare you? but Harry had something going on. And what is that something going on? He had a desire to work. So we hear something like that, and he had a chance to work on his own historical personality. And he saw, it was very obvious, as his friend pointed out to everybody else. So we're not physically working together. So we don't have that opportunity. Working here in the environment we're in here in Grass Valley, you have more of that. We have more of that possibility of shaking up the sleep that is so diligently following us. Any comments online to read, or?
Let me see.
Eventually, members of the work community will be thrown on their own, although the teacher will then be able to help in other ways. Everything we have learned so far is information about our purpose for being here in this work environment. We are accumulating information about how to work. But how to work is not just the accumulation of work ideas. We have come to understand very quickly and clearly that communicating about the ideas is not using the ideas. We came here not just to discuss ideas, but to learn to use them. Okay. Are there comments?
Sam?
There is a number of comments.
Please read those previous
questions from the time that that you said, and can we really help others? I mean, how would you feel if somebody points things out to you? Lost Horizon says, anything we do to help others without waking up will be activity of the historical personality.
Help us.
And Niridaja, you have to decide when you have done enough work on yourself in order to get to a point when you can help. Lost Horizon, with all its self-centeredness, etc. And there is a question here by Agni Didaya. How do you determine when is the right time to help others? It was a shock which may have damaged the relationship regarding to Harry's writing.
Yes.
Harry answers, only for a moment, but I remain grateful to him. And Nidaya, if you are going to take that stance with others, you have to choose how tough or who very carefully.
Correct. It's risky, isn't it? It's a risky moment. You say something to another, and you may be saying it to the other because of your own personality. So when you get to that moment where you're willing to take that experience for another, you have to be willing to be selfless at that moment and look at yourself also. I don't know this individual that came to help Harry from New Mexico, but I would not be surprised if we found that he also was willing at that moment to look at himself. But when you're kind of in that moment of courageous balance, that might be a clue to you. So you don't start with the other person. You don't start with how are they bothering you, but rather you start with your inner self. Where do I stand at this moment when I'm looking to work with another? And that's another sense form of discernment, and that comes through sensing. You have to sense where you are at that moment.
That's I'll bring a comment from Mark. As per this discussion, I am interested to find out when one has helped enough oneself in order to help others. What are the criteria we can apply? Sama agrees that is a very good question. And anyways, right before you said that, I said I think your own discernment, Mark, but being very humble to start with is a good lead.
Well, Sama and Mark are right. It's a very difficult point. So let's take something as simple as trying to learn how to juggle. When you begin to learn how to juggle, you actually don't know how. Your hands don't know what to do. You're used to it. So you start, and what's one of the very first things that happens when you're trying to learn to juggle? If anybody's ever tried to learn to juggle. You drop the ball. You spend most of your time chasing the balls that you're attempting to juggle. That's called how to juggle. Gradually, you get a sense of how, when you stop reacting to dropping, you start to get a sense of how your hands flow. You begin to sense, oh, my hand needs to do this, and wait. You sense it from the inside, not from the outside. So, how do you do that when you are in that position? And I know that Mama and Four Paws and Path World and are working intensely in a group. How do you know when to step over that line? You look inside. Where are you when you speak that? And maybe the first 10 to 20, 30, 50 times you make a mistake, and it's just your own ego. But if you keep at it with a certain selfless attitude, you'll find the place in yourself where it's appropriate to bring it out to your fellow worker. And sometimes you find that place only in working together. And they come back and you say, you know, you SOB, you just said that because of your own ego. Maybe you did. Does that answer even close or help at all?
Yeah, I guess Mark is giving the feedback. Mark Roach, it says, Mark says, which is why one of the times I learned how to juggle, they had us practice dropping the balls.
Yeah.
So that we got used to it rather than freaking out when we dropped them.
I think I've given this kind of a grisly example of something. But the high-end elite security people that are working on a level of like international security for high visibility people. One of the most difficult things is what to do if they're in a process and they hear a gunshot, or God forbid, they're actually hit. How do they react? And they're actually put through training when they're actually shot with a paintball gun. I think I've brought this up before as an example. I have been hit by a paintball gun. And it's how to take that and not react as normal, but to be able to respond appropriately. So you stay in it until your habitual historical personality isn't the guide. Okay? So now we inch ahead in our reading here. When we first come to a school, the questions are put to us. Why are we here? What do we wish for ourselves? What do we seek here? Why do we impose ourselves on this community? I'd like to pause. I mean, it's a kind of a short chapter, but I'd like to pause there and just ask the question. Because everybody that's on right now is a bit experienced in work on self. Maybe there's some true beginners, but not everybody. There's a lot of folks online who are not beginners. So my question is, how would you formulate a more exact aim for yourself right now? In a sense, why are you here tonight? What brought you to this, and what is it that you seek? When the question is posed, something goes on in us. There's a little fear. It's performance anxiety of a certain form. But what goes on when you hear this? And what is that aim? Can you formulate a pragmatic and exact aim? We've been through 7 chapters now in this book. Is there any way at this moment that you can formulate an exact aim? Everybody's thinking.
I particularly, the aim that I have here is, first of all, I choose the right environment, or although I am not in the school, let's say, but we could say that is similar to a school, environment to really learn more about myself. And I think it's the right place to do that, to really what I'm made of, this totality of me.
Okay, so we ask the question. So then Simon says he's formulating a goal, and that goal is called to know more about yourself. Is that correct?
Yeah, to know more about myself, the totality of me. What is that thing called being? What is the essence? What is the personality, the historical personality, and the mechanism? What is to be asleep? What is to be awake?
Okay, so those are broad-based things, so let's push on that a little bit. Like, yeah, what might it mean for you specifically to know more about yourself? How are you going to go about that? What are your exact techniques? And is it measurable?
Yes. See, the main technique for me is self-observance and self-remembrance.
Okay.
Observance as much as I can, and that will give me the perspective of what I'm looking for.
Okay.
And it's measurable.
Yes, it is.
I have a few comments here if you want.
Please, yeah.
Sinhog. Trying to overcome my electrical anomalies.
Okay.
To be, Tama says, to be exposed, baby.
Okay. Okay.
Four paws. You want to comment something?
No, go ahead. Read all of them, and then I'll comment.
Okay, four parts. To learn how to know myself better, faster. Path world. My aim is toward the greater purpose. Four parts. Use better tools than the ones I have. Agniridaya, essence. Be in essence, no resistance. Path world to know myself.
Good.
Ginger Rogers, to work on presence and attention in the present time. And Harry Piangio, I believe that my interaction with people here tonight will foster our relationship together, so we can more aware that we are one organism, one single organism, the synergy of which will evoke individual gifts. It will make finding our bliss.
Okay. So let's say that you wrote that you actually wrote down those aims, like Sinhog, I'm not going to address yours at the moment, but if you remember it and write it down, we're going to address it in a few chapters. Okay, what he's talking about is like those are that's an exact terminology that we're going to get to in a little while. Can you read Samas again?
Okay, let me track it back.
To be.
Sama, she said, just a small comment, Sama. She said, I think she agreed. She agreed with somebody.
Oh, she said, it's like to be open or to be exposed.
It seems I could start by saying, train to overcome my electrical anomalies. And Sama answers, to be exposed, baby.
Okay, so let's stop there for a moment. So let's say you write that down and you put it on a little post-it all over the place. First of all, you have to start to understand, what does it mean to be exposed, baby? What does that actually mean? How does it actually work for you? If you take that tool and you perfect it, anything is possible. As William Blake said, and we've mentioned this in the past, as William Blake said, if a fool would but persist in his foolishness, he would become wise. We can see that that's true. Look at the great court jesters. They took foolishness to a level of perfection. So, exactly what does that mean for you? It doesn't necessarily have to be one of interest to me, but it's a tool that one could use. But take it and work with it. Actually make it something, make it a tool for you, make it a tool that is actually workable for you. Now that's the formulation of an exact, the beginnings of a formulation of an exact aim, okay? At this level, at the level that we're at. I'll give you another one that's come up a number of times in the chapters. Discernment. How to perfect discernment. What is discernment? How does it even work? How does it work in this exact situation? Tomorrow, you're going to go out, and among everybody online, someone's going to wind up going to a store or a restaurant or some public event. Now, I happen to know that some people, when they go out, their work with discernment is at a very interesting level, or their work at being exposed. So take these tools and take them seriously. You said them. You said I want to know myself. Do you? Do you really? What if somebody walked up to you and said, oh, that particular habit really annoys everybody. You're the only one that doesn't care for it, that thinks it's cute. Now, that, what if somebody walked up to you and said that? Would that include being, I want to know myself? It's a challenge, isn't it?
Right, right. I have a comment here for Piangio. Being exposed means I have to admit I need others. Ime, Ivan, I wish to cultivate the waking state as it is brought on by this group's engagement with the ideas of the guide. I selflessly wish to be reminded to awaken the machine.
Okay, so let's ask ourselves, what does it mean to be engaged? Like right now, if you're participating, and I guarantee you that I am, and I know that several other people making comments are engaged right now. What does that mean? The attention is active, and the sense of presence is alive and at work right now. And when it's alive and at work like that, you carry it then into other areas, and you'll notice very interesting things. And the question that I asked Simon, is it measurable? Can you actually notice the effects of your work?
Yes.
Can, go ahead.
Yes, yes, I can notice that. I can notice that as the, in the same way that when you exercise a muscle, you can see that your muscle is getting bigger somehow. And in my the way that I notice that is how I, how often that is, happens to me, that I came back to myself and I observe myself and I remember to do it. Not only that, but I observe, I have noticed that it's happening more often, that I see as objective as I can be, yeah, at this degree, how my machine is working by itself.
The other thing that will eventually occur is you're going to start seeing, and it'll be frightening when suddenly you start seeing hidden matrices of behavior that you carry on that support your mechanicality. Suddenly you'll see a little teeny behavior and you'll go, oh my gosh, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
So like in physical exercise, one of the best, most formidable exercises is doing the simple push-up. And right now you can think, oh yeah, I can do push-ups. Oh, well, can you do 5, 10, 20? But when you actually start to do it, that's an actual measurement. So when you, if you're doing this kind of work and you're doing this work of discernment or the work of self-knowledge, you'll break into other vistas. Or let's say several people said remaining awakened in presence. Well, in the heat of battle, if that becomes enough of a force for you in the heat of battle, you'll carry that into that in a difficult situation. Let's say you have a tough relationship with your mother or your brother or your child. Can you remain present in that environment as well? That's the challenge. Those are exact aims that you can work with from where we're at.
Sama
okay?
says, sometimes I do, Sometimes I see the effects, reactions, and habits, sometimes through others' words and others' responses. And Nidia just says, we want all of that presence in the moment, attention and a live essence.
And when Sama, when you're working in doing like a group setup of some sort, and you're the focus of trying to get something done, and there's a mistake, can you remain open at that time? It's at those moments when we learn something new. Not only do we learn something new, but here's the key. It's we build up that inner muscle, and we remain exposed by allowing ourselves to admit there's something we can't do and that we are limited. And if you get over the shock of embarrassment and humiliation and you go on, that's when you bring that tool in. And in those moments, a great strength begins to come and you start to do it. Remember what we talked about when we spoke about being awake. And if I remember correctly, we did mention the term a vibratory sensation. If that vibratory sensation becomes tangible for you, you'll also know when it's not there. Attention and presence. Stillness and silence.
Agnirida just says, the challenge is to hold yourself open when resistance rises up.
Yes. Very
Sama,
good.
Sama answers that. It's very hard, and sometimes I can. I just keep doing. And other times I start to react internally, which Sama too brings, you know, the other aspect that our habits or our reactions are not only in the moving examples on the tics we may have or movements we do with the machine, but it happens in our emotions, how we always react in the same, at the same trigger, the same emotion comes, or the same mental thinking.
That's right. We have three centrums, and they tend to be mechanical.
Yeah.
They will like that. Now, let's go back to what Sama says. It's sometimes I start to react. My goodness, what an incredibly valuable moment that is. We want to look at it. Like last week, I think I shared the thing about how I go into comparison when I went into this person's home, valuable home and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was into comparison. At first I had shame that that's the kind of behavior I had. But then I had gratitude to see that that was how this thing worked. So if Sama, at those moments, jump up and down in joy. Oddly enough, 450 years ago, Spinoza was writing to his friend Oldenburg, and they were talking about the how to get to freedom. And Spinoza says, from time to time, I see an additional infirmity in me, a weakness. He says, I jump for joy that there is another area of freedom. Now let's look at this for a moment. What happens when we are caught in the reactive mode? When we're in the reactive mode, where is our attention? It's outside us.
Yeah.
And the great power and the great energy of this machine is being expressed outside us. If at that moment we can begin to bring it in, we start to harvest that energy, don't we?
Yeah. And it's interesting, David, too, that the layers of the onion of this subject, too, just in your example, your first automatic or mechanical reaction was that you start comparing. And you realize that. But the second was that you feel shame. And then you reverse that. You reverse the second one to the joy of having found that.
So we have the opportunity at these moments to do something different. So when Sama and you know, it's very brave to share this stuff about ourselves. So when we get into those circumstances, and I know the kind of work she's doing and the work that Path World and for the work they're doing in a specific group way, when they're doing it, and then she starts to react because she's in it more of a boiler room of work. Well, that's what it takes to get more from our experience. And then notice, why, that's an interesting thing. And you'll notice that it's the same trigger over and over again. Maybe a certain kind of external energy, but something happens.
Sinha says, my sticking point is, my vain ego does not want to be seen as a fool or monster in front of others.
Well,
you need to exaggerate that. Be a fool.
So Sama, find an area that you're particularly nervous about being a fool in, Sinhog, and then do what she's telling us, use that guidance, and exaggerate it. Exaggerate it. Because then you get to see it. And that was when Harry's friend said, well, if you're going to do it with gusto. So you do it with attention and presence. Don't just do it as a reactive thing. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit because there's a couple more points I'd like to make. And I'm now on page 58 of the of this version. We must perfect our aim in order to even gain admittance to many communities where these ideas can be learned. In a way, it would help us to be turned away from community after community until we had sharpened and formulated our aim exactly, and until we had developed a real aim, something which could actually serve a greater aim, not something subjective and fantastical. So if our aim is to, let's say, develop discernment, or develop, allow ourselves to be in the surrender of exposure, and there's the word, a surrender. This is a huge tool, or we like discernment, or I want to know myself. Then the community knows you're working and willing to work on yourself, and therefore you're bringing something to the game. You're not there to get from the community. You're saying, okay, here's what I'm bringing to the game. I'm willing to work on myself. I'm willing to be in surrender. And that's the other word to the idea of I want to be exposed. It's willing to be in acquiescence or surrender. Big word. Big, big, big word.
to become, that speaks too of the how you make yourself vulnerable.
Yeah.
Vulnerability, exposement.
And I certainly have been through that one and have a very difficult time in that area.
Yeah, me too.
So we jump ahead. We need special help to understand why we come to a school. Those of us who have been, we've been working for a while, you can begin to formulate why you're here. But that's the question that we should write down. Why did you come tonight? Why did you even bother to get up and come to this, you know, class for 1 hour? Why are you here? What in you compelled you to do this? Take responsibility for that. And it, with it comes a load of responsibility. And so we need, and I'm on page 59, we need special help to understand why we come to school. But once we do understand what we are trying to accomplish, it is our responsibility to make certain that people in generations following ours also are educated from their first vague discomforts to an understanding of a real aim. We also are expected to educate others in the underlying facts and understanding that are the basis for this work. And then to continue, it is a process of education, not of information. And the last full paragraph on page 59, if these new aims are to be real aims, they must actually be accomplishable. So if you look at the aims that you've chosen for yourself, ask yourself, how is what I have decided to do? I know that some people says, to know myself. How is that measurable? For the moment, let's just say, to you. Or somebody says, I want to work on being more awake. That's a more difficult question. How do you know? Oddly enough, there's objective answers to these. How do you know that you are beginning to accomplish that aim? I challenge you to write down those aims. They are very, very profound. Write them down and, like, keep them on a card in your pocket, as you go along, and accidentally find that card later in the day. It'll have quite an effect. From the time we first enter a school until the time we are initiated into the first objective aim, all our aims will be subjective and personal. Can't be otherwise. So if that's the case, like, I want to be in more in surrender, or I want to know myself more, I want to be more awake, that's okay. Those are good, tangible, important aims. But it's fundamentally different than much later on. We think there are objective aims. Those come in from a different package, in a sense. We don't know those yet. Well, the machine is asleep. The only equipment with which we could understand the greater aim is the mental apparatus, and the mental apparatus cannot grasp for the greater purpose. The objective aims of our work as a community lead inexorably toward the greater purpose. Each of these aims is accomplishable, and proof of their objectivity is that they are accomplishable. So if you pick an aim to use better tools, to find better tools than the one I had, I think was the one that Forepaw said, write that down. Well, what the heck is a tool? How can I use it? Well, if we come back to her in a year and say, what did you find out about your aim? She can tell us, here are the tools that I talked about. Here are the tools that I worked with. And here's what I'm using now. And we can tell that there has been a progress. Perhaps we have developed a sense of a potential for evolution. We thought somehow, somewhere, we believed in a higher form of life, something greater. But without definite evidence, this can only be a belief and not something which we can verify in our own experience. However, what we can do, and this is extremely personal, is move from one step of certainty to another one. Don't just leap. Sometimes you have to wait too. But in this, it's you. You're the task here. That's worth a lot. It's worth it to be certain. Take your time. You're worth it. I'm not talking to the machine right there, by the way. We can imagine that most of us have formulated this belief that there must be some purpose in life. There must be more to it than just an endless round of pleasure and pain and pursuit of this attraction and immersion and that distraction and so on. To answer this belief would require that we were able to somehow comprehend the greater purpose. How'd you like them apples? Simon, anything to read as we come to the end here?
Just comment in general, nothing in particular. Silver Day, thank you, David, for leading, and all others for participating and contributing tonight. Let me see if I can. Everybody's thankful to you. The Anilida just says, the aims change. They gradually move to fewer self-objectives. Later, you really want, in capital letters, the work.
Yes.
I'm just beginning. And the same for Ginger Rogers.
So,
that
just
is the most excellent adventure, my friend. Thank you to all.
It is an excellent adventure. And we are, so the purpose of this chapter is to help us formulate an exact aim, and part of the objectivity of that exact aim is that it is measurable. So formulate that aim for yourself, and does it have the characteristic of being measurable? And as you work with that, bring that bit back to the group in 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. Bring that back to us and let us know how it worked for you. For all of us will be enriched by the work that you're doing. And by you sharing it, you will also be enriched by helping us and giving the gift of your work. So thanks for coming this night. I look forward to seeing you next week, and next week we're on Chapter 9. So we'll meet again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thanks for your participation.
Super. Thank you. Thank you, David. Thank you all.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, gang. See you all next week.
You
bye,
bet.
Mike. Bye-bye.